It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Just one day after meeting with President Zelensky in Ukraine, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin hosted a gathering of military leaders from 40 NATO and non-NATO countries in Germany. He said that Putin, quote, never imagined that the world would rally behind Ukraine so swiftly and surely. And he added, Ukraine clearly believes it can win, and so does everyone here. But then, General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, wasn't quite as confident. He said, in closed-door comments, quote, time is not on Ukraine's side. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is in Moscow to meet with Putin and his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. He is calling for a ceasefire today and said everything must be done to end the war as soon as possible. Meanwhile, the airstrikes continue. Russia hit Ukrainian rail and fuel facilities on Monday, damaging key infrastructure across the country while focusing its ground war on eastern Ukraine. But on Russia's side of the border, two fires erupted at oil facilities. It wasn't immediately clear what caused the blazes. And now the shelling is hitting outside of Ukrainian territory, too. Moldova's president convened a meeting of the country's Security Council Tuesday after multiple explosions were reported in the breakaway Republic of Transnistria, which is backed by Moscow and borders Ukraine. No one has yet claimed responsibility. A Russian military commander suggested last week that Moscow aims to establish a corridor through southern Ukraine to Transnistria, but it's unclear whether this is official Kremlin strategy or not. Here at home, the tweets are flying after Twitter announced Monday that it would accept Tesla CEO Elon Musk's $44 billion offer to buy the social media company and take it private. Musk launched his hostile takeover bid after amassing about 9% of Twitter stock to become its largest shareholder. He'll pay Twitter investors $54.20 in cash for every share of their stock. That's a 38% premium over the price on the day he revealed his ownership stake. Twitter initially resisted the offer, but apparently re-examined it after Musk announced that he had lined up more than enough financing. He vowed to, quote, unlock the company's tremendous potential and reduce restrictions on free speech, whatever that means in Musk world. But despite people fleeing Twitter, he hasn't taken over yet. And he probably won't very quickly. The deal still needs to be finalized, and that could take weeks or even months. Troubles appear to be mounting for the former guy, as a New York judge on Monday held the Orange One in contempt of court for refusing to comply with a subpoena issued by State Attorney General Letitia James' office demanding documents for her investigation into Trump's business practices. The judge imposed a $10,000 per day fine until Trump complies. The Attorney General, Letitia James, has said that there is significant evidence that the former guy and his company, the Trump Organization, got lower taxes and better loans by relying on misleading asset valuations. Trump's lawyer said they had already produced documents in response to the subpoena and accused James of conducting a political crusade against the former guy. Oh, Lordy, there are even more texts, both to and from former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, including some perjury busters, like from Marjorie Taylor Greene. In a text message to Meadows, dated January 17th, just 3 days before the inauguration, she said that lawmakers wanted the former guy to impose martial law to avoid transferring power to President Biden. But when asked under oath on Friday, Greene said she didn't recall advocating martial law. Not only did she say it, she also misspelled it. Marshall, M-A-R-T-I-A-L. Marge, just saying. Sadly, there's lots of stuff in the Florida file today, beginning with the latest fascist moves taken by the state's governor. On Monday, DeSantis signed a bill into law creating a new election police force, officially called the Office of Election Crimes and Security. It'll be responsible for looking into voter fraud accusations and other violations of election law. Now, voter fraud is extremely rare, but has become a key issue for Republicans following President Biden's victory over the former guy in 2020. DeSantis signed that bill at a sports bar called Rookies. Of course he did. The budget he will sign, probably in May, includes enough money, $2.6 million, to pay for 25 positions in this new election crimes force. By the way, Florida is the only state in the nation to have enacted such a force, though I'm sure others will follow along. But that's not the only fun in the sun. Just last week, the Florida legislature returned to Tallahassee for a special session to pass DeSantis's own congressional map after he vetoed earlier efforts. Despite objections from Democrats that it eliminates two majority black districts and gerrymanders the rest to widen the Republicans' current 16 to 11 seat advantage to 20 to 8, the legislature passed the map and DeSantis signed it into law on Friday. But almost immediately, as expected, the first lawsuit was filed against the map. The plaintiffs alleging it violates multiple provisions of Florida's Fair District Amendment by favoring Republicans and diminishing the ability of black Floridians to elect the representative of their choice. And as we wait for the courts to rule, other newly drawn maps are being challenged around the country. Last Thursday, a New York appellate court issued a ruling in the lawsuit challenging New York's new congressional and legislative maps. A trial court had previously overturned the districts, ruling that New York legislature did not follow the constitutional redistricting process. And additionally, the court found the congressional map was drawn with political bias. An Ohio Supreme Court just 10 days ago threw out the fourth set of maps there is unconstitutional, leaving the state and its voters in limbo. Primary day in Ohio is just 1 week away, Tuesday, May 3rd, so they're up against the clock. And finally, the Supreme Court is in its final week of oral arguments for this term. They'll hand down decisions likely through the end of June. But on Monday, the court heard a church versus state argument. High school football coach Joe Kennedy was relieved of his job after leading prayers after games in the middle of the field. The court's conservative majority appeared to lean toward Kennedy and compared his actions to taking the knee. Oy. This case could give educators more leeway to carry out religious practices in public schools. On Tuesday, the court hears two cases, Biden v. Texas, in which the court will review Biden's attempt to rescind the Trump policy that requires asylum seekers at the southern border to remain in Mexico while they await hearings in the U.S. Immigration Court. The second case is Shoup v. Twyford. The justices will clarify federal court's powers under the All Writs Act, which deals with the law, and in this case, a prisoner's efforts to develop new evidence. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.